Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. Thanks for downloading and listening to this show. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of November 17th. November Patch Tuesday Review, Inside the SMB Office, Live Services Rollout, Sun Cuts Its Workforce, and IT Spending Remains Steady for 2009, says one survey. We'll head to the first news segment from Redmond right after this quick musical interlude. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I'd like to thank everyone who downloads or streams this show or shares it with others. Even with the year winding down, there's still lots of news coming out of Redmond. Let's jump right into it. Microsoft last Monday announced version 3 of its security development lifecycle threat modeling tool and rolled out the SDL optimization model as free resources available at MSDN. The solutions are part of the company's broader outreach on security, which also includes the Microsoft SDL Pro Network. The network comprises 9 consultancies, including Verizon Business, IO Active, and Security Innovation, which specializes in application security and provides guidance to businesses that are implementing SDL practices. The release marks Microsoft's foray into what once was exclusively the domain of independent IT security consultants, Big Five IT audit firms, and independent compliance shops. Microsoft is providing a resource planning and development support for high and granular security benchmarks. The tools include matrices and assessment templates. The company's SDL efforts got a public boost back in August when Microsoft kicked off a more collaborative effort on security issues at the Black Hat Conference. Microsoft also promised greater transparency during its security patch release cycles. In related news, Redmond rolled out 2 fixes in its Tuesday patch, one deemed critical and one important. And as expected, the November release comes with both fixes designed to stave off remote code execution vulnerabilities in Windows programs. The critical item affects Windows and Microsoft Office and deals specifically with Windows XML Core Services versions 3, 4, and 6. Windows XML Core Services helps developers create XML-based applications such as web apps that share structured data. Knowledge about the vulnerability first emerged in January of 2007. According to Microsoft, when a user clicks on a corrupted link, XML coding in the page is processed and remote code execution will occur. However, it's somewhat complex to set up the XML code from a hacker's perspective. This critical fix is relevant for certain IE and SharePoint server users. Affected OSs include Windows 2000 SP4, XP, Vista, and Windows Servers version 2003 and 2008. The second fix resolves a previously disclosed vulnerability in Microsoft Server Message Block Protocol. It's similar to a fix released 11 months ago covering SMB version 2. If the RCE exploits were to compromise this SMB hole, an attacker could install programs and change privileges. For instance, a hacker could change, edit, and delete privileges within the OS layer and configure user rights. With that patch 7 years in the making, experts say to make sure to patch this one up, even though it's only tagged as important by Microsoft. Microsoft showcased new functionality in Windows Studio 2010 last week at TechEd Barcelona, and the company also said it was slashing prices on different versions of VS 2008 by as much as 30%. Microsoft revealed that the upcoming IDE will support .NET 4.0, Windows 7, Office 14, and SharePoint, and integrate several existing out-of-band technologies such as the ASP.NET Model View Controller Framework, improved JavaScript IntelliSense, jQuery support, one-click deployment of ASP.NET apps, and Silverlight 2 retooling. SharePoint tooling such as an Explorer and Project Template will also be added. A new virtual lab management feature in Visual Studio Team System 2010 is designed to speed up testing with quick setup and teardowns using virtual machines that can capture user states and reproduce bugs. As for the VS 2008 pricing promotions, which started October 1st and will continue to roll out through December 1st, those are designed to provide discounts to developers using competitive products and to those already in the Microsoft ecosystem who may want to upgrade to the Microsoft Developer Network, or VSTS. Sun Microsystems is distributing Microsoft's MSN Toolbar browser plugin, which includes Microsoft Live Search. The collaborative deal aims to help Microsoft expand its online search advertising business by getting more people to use Live Search. As of last Monday, U.S. users of IE can add Microsoft's Toolbar as an option when downloading Sun's Java runtime environment. Microsoft currently holds about 10% of the global search market, which puts it in third place, trailing badly behind number two Yahoo and number one Google. Search ad revenues depend on users clicking on ads generated by a query. Microsoft has tried other options to increase the use of its live search engine, including a cashback program that provides product discounts to live search users. Sun had previously bundled Google's search toolbar as a download option with its Java runtime. Now, under the new deal with Microsoft, Google's toolbar is only being distributed with Sun's Java runtime outside the U.S. market. Microsoft has developed four demonstration applications that showcase its Live Mesh cloud-based data synchronization service. The apps are part of a new Mesh Pack and were apparently announced late last month at Microsoft's PDC. The Mesh Pack includes a collaborative crossword puzzle, a shared bulletin board, a collaborative list application, and a group polling tool called CrowdVote. The Mesh Pack was produced by Microsoft Startup Labs, which creates prototypes and product concepts on various platforms, including Live Mesh, according to the lab's blog. Right now, access to the Mesh Pack seems to depend on having a PDC code. The PDC event was also the venue in which Microsoft announced that Live Mesh has advanced from a community technology preview release to beta release. Previously, Microsoft had limited the number of participants in the Live Mesh CTP. However, with the live beta release, people worldwide can now sign up to use it. The Live Mesh beta features additional support. Users of the beta version can now sync data to hardware devices running Mac OS X and Windows Mobile version 6 and 6.1. In related news, Microsoft said it plans to roll out updates to its Windows Live services and Windows Live Essentials offerings, which are aimed at consumer users. On the developer side, Microsoft exec Satya Nadella told PubCon attendees in Las Vegas last week about the latest in Live Search developer tools for website search optimization. Microsoft Live Services are the online solutions part of the company's overall software plus services strategy. Under this strategy, Microsoft plans to offer both installed solutions and hosted services and sync the data between both. Consumers will see an updated Windows Live over the coming weeks in the U.S. market, according to a Microsoft post last Tuesday. The updated Windows Live services will be available in 54 countries by early 2009. Microsoft has partnered with more than 50 web companies for the Windows Live launch, with integrated Windows Live services from Flickr, LinkedIn, Pandora, and others. It also teamed with HP to integrate Windows Live Photo Gallery with HP printers. China Telecom will co-brand Windows Live Messenger as part of its internet service. As for Live Search APIs for developers, the APIs, which are at beta version 2.0, are part of Microsoft's codename Silk Road project. Silk Road is designed to help web publishers build traffic on their sites, and those who use Silk Road can select content to enhance the user's search experience on the publisher's website. Search results can be delivered using JSON, RSS, SOAP, or XML web service protocols. And in our final news item for this segment, Microsoft's Office web applications, announced late last month at the PDC conference, will work on multiple platforms, including Apple's iPhone, according to a Microsoft Channel 10 blog. Lightweight versions of Excel, OneNote, PowerPoint, and Word will be accessible by supported web browsers, including IE, Firefox, and Safari. The iPhone uses Mobile Safari, a version of Apple's web browser. A Live ID will be needed to use Office web applications. In order to collaborate and exchange document files over the internet, users will need an Office Live workspace account. And that's news from Redmond. We'll check in with news from the far reaches of IT after this quick break right here on Redmond Radio. Like the music? Well, thanks for listening to Redmond Radio once again. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. How about some virtualization news to start off this segment? VMware announced that it will target mobile phone makers and their partners with a new bare metal hypervisor optimized for telecom applications. The new product has been developed through the acquisition last month of Trango Virtual Processors. The new hypervisor has been rebranded as VMware's mobile virtualization platform and targets an emerging growth market. Market researcher Gartner has predicted that by 2012, over half of all smartphones being shipped by suppliers will be virtualized. Although still being evaluated by mobile handset vendors and not yet generally available, VMware MVP will eventually be embedded in mobile phones, where it will perform many of the same tasks that the company's ESX virtualization software does today for servers. This includes decoupling applications and data from the device itself, as well as the OS. Parallels has released Parallels Desktop 4.0, an update to the company's desktop virtualization solution for Mac OS X, which adds more than 50 new features, including support for DirectX 9 and significant performance improvements. Other features include support for DirectX 9, DirectX Pixel Shader 2.0, and OpenGL 2.0, new security and backup features integrated into the software, including Acronis True Image Home, Acronis Disk Director Suite, and Parallels Internet Security, and Adaptive Hypervisor for dynamic allocation of resources. As well, there's an overall 15 to 30% improvement in resource consumption via an optimized virtualization engine. Administrators have made improvements in the security of the domain name system during the last year, but DNS complexity and a lack of resources have resulted in major security gaps being left in the system that underlies almost all internet traffic, according to a recent survey of DNS servers. One of the most glaring gaps is that 25% of the servers have not been patched for the DNS vulnerability announced earlier this year by Dan Kaminsky, which could allow cache poisoning. The fix issued for this flaw in the DNS protocol enables port randomization for queries. A major push by vendors was conducted over the summer to raise awareness and encourage patching. Still, 45% of administrators queried said they do not have the resources to fix the problem, and 30% said they do not know enough about DNS. The report does say that most DNS servers are running up-to-date software with fewer vulnerabilities, and most security trends are improving, if slowly. DNS maps domain names to IP addresses, directing internet queries to the appropriate location. Name servers do this resolution for essentially every internet request, protecting the system from vulnerabilities that could allow addresses to be spoofed, traffic to be hijacked, or servers to be subject to denial-of-service attacks is critical to the health and availability of the internet. The survey is the fourth annual study of domain name servers on the internet conducted by Infoblox and the Measurement Factory. It's based on a sample of 5% of the IPv4 address space, which is scanned for name servers. The servers are then queried for information in their software and configuration. The sample produced an estimate of 11.9 million name servers on the public-facing internet, which is consistent with last year's estimate of 11.7 million servers. The sweep showed that 90% of the servers running the Berkeley Internet Name Domain, the most common DNS software, are running recent versions of Bind 9, about the same percentage as last year. The latest versions of Bind are the most secure. At the same time, there has been a dramatic falloff in the use of the Microsoft DNS server, which has dropped from 2.7% of the population studied last year to just 0.17% this year. In other security-related news, spammers are jumping on the global financial crisis to lure unsuspecting victims into their botnets by using the line, "Treasury Secretary Paulson wants to send you money." And in the wake of last week's election, President-elect Barack Obama also has emerged as bait for other large spam campaigns. In hours of the closing of polls, online security companies began reporting a rash of emails purportedly coming from news organizations or official government sites containing links to speeches, interviews, or other election news. The links actually redirect email recipients to malicious code. MXLogic reported seeing more than 1 million of the messages in the first 2 hours of their appearance, and Sophos said that similar messages represented up to 60% of all malicious spam seen in its labs on November 5th. In its most recent State of Spam report, covering October 2008, Symantec reported that spam averaged a little more than 76% of all email detected at the mail gateway with SMTP layer filtering last month, up 6 points from the same month last year, but down from an 80% peak in August. After dropping over the last year, the amount of image spam began to spike again in October, most of it associated with bank phishing schemes. The U.S. once again was the number one source of spam last month, originating 29% of the worldwide volume. Turkey was in second place with 8%. Less than 12 hours after Obama's November 4th acceptance speech, MXLogic began seeing messages in its spam traps from spoofed addresses for organizations such as BBC, CNN, and USA Today. The subject lines included Barack Obama wins, election night results, and fear of a black president. Links in the messages took recipients to a lookalike news website that prompted users to download a file called adobe_flash9.exe, which actually contains malware. Despite a troublesome economy, IT staff and executive positions are safe for now, according to a market study released on Wednesday. That's one of the conclusions of a computer economics study which surveyed 159 North American IT organizations in October. The research firm found that IT executives are not anticipating deep cuts in IT operational spending or staffing levels in 2009. Organizations currently are focused on retaining their employees, according to the report. Outlook for 2009 IT spending and staffing levels. However, some respondents, or 35%, are reducing spending in major areas such as travel, training, filling open positions, and initiating major planned projects. It could be worse, according to the report's executive summary, which says, more organizations are cutting IT spending this quarter than was the case earlier this year, but the cost cutting is not nearly as draconian as one might assume by reading the business news headlines. In a release statement, Computer Economics noted that IT organizations responded at the median and 25 percentiles forecast no change in headcount in 2009, while companies at the 75th percentile are actually forecasting a 5% growth in staffing levels. Sun last week announced that it will reduce its global workforce by 5,000 to 6,000 employees in the next year, which equates to 15 to 18% of its workforce. In addition to the job cuts, Sun is creating new business groups for its software organization. The new groups include application platform software, systems platforms, and cloud computing and developer platforms. Marketing efforts for products and technology will be conducted by the individual groups, according to the plan. The restructuring plan, approved by the board of directors, is aimed at reducing annual overhead by as much as $800 billion, according to the announcement. Sun will spend from $375 million to $450 million next year implementing the plan. Advanced Micro Devices will release next generation of quad-core Opteron processors, a line formerly codenamed Shanghai, by the end of the year, according to Steve Demski, an AM product and marketing manager. This will be the first line of AMD server and workstation processors created with the smaller 45-nanometer lithography process, which should provide improved performance and lower power requirements. The previous Opteron generation were created by a 65-nanometer process. Demski touted the smaller lithography process as being key for the energy savings. The lithography process involves etching out circuits on the die using laser beams, and in this case, beams 45 nanometers wide rather than 65. Printing circuit patterns on the chip wafer with a finer process means the circuitry itself will use less power, as it is smaller and more tightly laid out. And in our last item, the Energy Department's Oak Ridge National Laboratory has upgraded its Cray XT-based Jaguar supercomputer, which means that the machine is now in the running as the world's fastest supercomputer, as measured by twice-annual top 500 list of most powerful supercomputers. The upgraded computer has been run at 1.64 petaflops. Currently, the Los Alamos National Labs IBM-based Roadrunner ranked at the world's most powerful supercomputer, churning out a peak of 1.37 petaflops. Jaguar has already run one job that required a sustained performance of 1.3 petaflops. Most of the work that Jaguar will carry out will be on behalf of the Energy Department's Innovative and Novel Computational Impact on Theory and Experiment program, which grants computer time on a peer-reviewed basis to universities, industries, and other government agencies. And that's it for this week's episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo, and I'd like to thank all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass the show on to their colleagues. See you here next week.